So today we're going to be talking about vegetables in the next hour. Tom McCubbin is coming up. And I think we have a great dirty word of the day. This week I was looking at wildflowers growing in the garden, but I also passed a beautiful, beautiful flowering cactus in a punchia, which is called prickly pear. They're all blooming right now. They're just gorgeous. And so I have a dirty word of the day regarding Opuntia. And the dirty word of the day is inspired by a beautiful yellowing prickly pear cactus. They are gorgeous right now. And the dirty word of the day is glochids. G-L-O-C-H-I-D-S. Glochids or glochidia are hair-like spines or short prickles, generally barbed, found on the areoles of cacti in the subfamily Opuntioideae. Cactus glochids easily detach from the plant and lodge in the skin, causing irritation upon contact. The tufts of the glochids in the areoles nearly cover the stem surfaces of most cactus species, each tuft containing hundreds of glochids. This may be in addition to or instead of the large, more conspicuous cactus spines, which do not readily detach and are not generally barbed. Most cactuses possess spines, some large enough to cause serious wounds. Glochids, however, even though they're smaller, commonly induce more troublesome, more persistent dermatological manifestations in humans. Though minute, glochids commonly are barbed, and once they penetrated the skin, those barbed glochids are practically impossible to dislodge without leaving scraps of foreign material in the wound. Implantation of glochidia in the skin does sometimes cause immediate irritation, but not always. As noticed with patients with lesions around the glochidia, patients who have no recollection of the penetration that caused the acute injury, even when it's clear that the injury is far from fresh. Distraction or excitement might cause the victim to overlook brushing past a cactus and picking up a few hundred barely visible glochids. In such cases, the irritant reaction may have a delayed onset. So they do cause quite a bit of an infection if left untreated, and the infection may last as long as 9 months when you have these glochids, and they're barbed, making the difficult removal. So how do you remove them? Yanking out the bristles may result in leaving one or more 20 to 30 micrometer-sized barbs in the skin, later to be manifested by infection. Attempts to suck out the glochidia are likely to result in their attachment to your tongue, so we don't want to do that. Popular methods of removing glochidia have included spreading adhesive plaster over the area and ripping it off quickly, or using melted wax to the tongue. To the skin. So scientists have evaluated many different methods of removing, from tweezers, glue, facial mask, adhesive tape, package sealing tape, and tweezing, followed by glue. The most effective method of removing these glochids was tweezing, which removed 76% of the spines. The method, using a thin layer of household glue covered with gauze, allowed to dry about 30 minutes, and then peeled off, resulted in a removal of 63% of the spines. Facial masks and adhesive tapes removed about 40 to 30%. And then according to the study, the most effective method is first to use tweezers to remove clumps of spines, followed by the application and removal of household glue, resulting in 95% removal of the spines. After removing the glochid fragments, soak the wound in an antibacterial solution. Lizzie, have you ever gotten those spines in your skin?
By the grace of God, no. Holy
the little fine hairs on a cactus, you've never gotten one?
No.
Oh, my goodness. I guess I've been out in the woods too much.
I've been very lucky. I've been around and we've had cow fields and stuff like that, or walking through the woods, but definitely haven't played a cactus tag with anybody.
My goodness. You're so fortunate. And what I don't understand is how the tortoises, the gopher tortoise, that's one of their food sources, is the prickly pear. And they love eating the prickly pear fruit, and they also eat the cactus pads. And so if, and the cactus pads are edible, but you either have to burn the pad's skin with a flame to remove the glow kids, or you have to boil them. And so, but glow kids, G-L-O-C-H-I-D-S, is the dirty word of the day. And if you've ever come in contact with a glow kid, you know that it is, you start to say dirty words. So coming up, we've got Tom McCubbin, and I'm so excited he's going to be on, and we're going to talk to him about southern peas. Stay tuned. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. If you're wanting an answer to your garden question, please call us at the bottom of the half hour. We will take your calls. Joining me right now is Dr. Tom McCubbin. Good morning, Tom. You're the plant doctor.
Good morning, Teresa, on this great Florida day, I'll tell you. Hey, listen, I have to tell you, I have had those little prickles from cactus in my hands. And one time, I backed into a cactus, and that was no fun. Luckily, it was a bigger cactus, a mammillaria cactus, but those thorns really hurt when you back into them.
I think you jumped a little bit, didn't you?
Oh, yes! But those little prickles off some of the cactus, I mean, they just stick into your skin, and they're there for days.
And you can't see them.
I haven't tried putting the wax on my tongue, so I might try that.
Take pictures. I want to. Speaking of pictures, you sent in some beautiful pictures of your garden, and you're saying it's growing really well right now. Tell us what you've got going on.
You know, I don't know. As I look back on it, this might be one of my better gardens. Each year, I probably say the same thing.
Uh-huh.
But right now, the corn is up and starting to tassel, just beginning. But we're eating squash. We're eating cucumbers. Pulled my first cucumber yesterday. Peppers are forming. Beans are be ready to eat pretty soon. And the broccoli's finished up. And so I got gladiolus coming up. It's just a great garden. Great time to be out there right now. Tomatoes are doing well.
It looks beautiful, and the plants are growing. It's been great despite the lack of rain. Has that affected your garden in any way?
You know, I have to think it helped it a little bit. It keeps the diseases down. Now, I have to water, no doubt about that, but I can water so the water can dry off and go through the night without being on the foliage of the plants. And I really think it's kept diseases down. The major problem I've had is army worms on the corn, and I used spinosad or spinosad, however you want to pronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the wasp had come in and controlled some of the caterpillars also.
Wonderful. That sounds great. And so you are really the vegetable expert, and you've been growing vegetables since you were how old?
You know, I can remember back about 4 years of age. That's as far back as I can go. But I remember because I had my own little garden at that time. I remember my parents giving me a spot. They had me out in the garden, and I pulled up the beets instead of the weeds. And so I think they decided maybe he ought to have his own spot. And that's what I got.
I love that. Now, I had a question for you regarding May in the garden, and May is coming up. Why do the planting calendars kind of skip May and between spring and summer vegetables? Why don't they suggest planting things in May, or what's the reason for that?
Well, I don't know. We don't suggest planting things in May, but most people have the garden well underway. As you look at the pictures that I sent you of my mm-hmm. garden, I'm out of room. Now, the broccoli is finishing up. I can pull the broccoli if I want to put some of the things for the warmer times in, I can. But May is a time when the garden, for the crops that like the mild temperatures, the beans, the corn, the tomatoes, that's when they're all fruiting. They're going to start to wind down at the end of May, early June. And so those crops are finishing up. Now, if you want to plant other crops, there's plenty of them to plant. Cherry tomatoes will still do well. If you want some of the tropicals like dasheen, Malabar spinach, New Zealand spinach, okra, yard-long beans, southern peas, what we're going to talk about, all those are available now, but you're not going to be able to grow some of the squash and the cucumbers going into summer. They're winding down now.
Okay, that makes sense. That's wonderful. Thank you. And so growing peas in the summertime, they're not the English peas that we traditionally think about. So tell us, what is a southern pea?
A southern pea is another legume, and there's a number of different types that we know. Actually, I was reading in one area where they say there's 11 different types, but in generally we consider four of them, which are field peas, crowder peas, cream, and black-eyed. And they're just a different pea. We can eat the pods if they're very young. Mainly we're after the seeds that are inside before they totally mature, or you can let them mature and eat them then too. So it's just a different crop. It's different from the English pea, which we grow only during the cooler weather. The English peas already finished up. They're different genus and species, but, you know, it's one of the favorites for the people, especially in the South.
Exactly. So do they look different? Do they all have, like, the black-eyed pea, that little black spot on them? Or how can you tell the difference?
Well, you probably can't really, as far as knowing the varieties or anything. Some of them are marked with a little spot right where they attach in the pod. Some of them are just creamy. Some are dark colored. It's a lot of variety there. Somewhere I read, it seemed like a long time ago, there's close to 1,000 different types. But we have ones like field peas, which are mainly for pasture areas, cover crops. One of them's iron and clay, and I've grown those, but I used them as a nematode control. Hmm. And the fact that nematodes, not that they kill the nematodes or anything, but the nematodes don't tolerate them very well, and so the nematode population just kind of declines. But then we have others that people probably heard, like Mississippi crowder, and crowder peas are pushed together in the pod, and that's how it gets its name, crowder.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah. And then we have cream peas, which one of the most famous is zipper cream. And I grow that one because it's developed by a University of Florida agronomist. And they get their name zipper cream because the pods can be zipped open. They actually have machines to haul out the peas. And the other names like cream 40, Texas cream, they're sweet and flavorful. I like those. And then you have the black-eyed. A lot of people love black-eyed, pink-eyed, purple hull, black-eyed, Dixie Lee. They all have that little dark eye, and they're a little more heavy in their flavor. And a lot of people like those too. So, you know, it's hard to pick your favorite.
I know. Well, I love them, and they're so hearty and delicious, and they store well, which is what I like about them. What kind of site conditions do you need to grow? Speaking of pastures, what kind of site conditions do southern peas need?
Well, you know, they manufacture their own nitrogen, so you don't need a overly fertile soil, but they do better if the sandy soils are improved with organic matter. If it's a site that hadn't been fertilized or you haven't had manure or anything, you can go ahead and put down some low nitrogen fertilizer. But any soil is fine. The one of the original ideas was growing southern peas because they could take the poorer soils and still produce a crop. But in our garden sites, they do better if the soil is a little fertile. It doesn't have to be as fertile as for corn or tomatoes or things like that. Well drained, they don't like wet soil, but any of our Florida sandy soils with some organic matter would be great.
Okay, and so do they need fertilizer, lots of it, or just a little bit?
In the beginning, just a little bit. And then after that, they're with the soil, rhizobium bacteria taking nitrogen from the air. Most of them do this. And so they'll grow themselves, just like any other garden pea or bean. They're all legumes, and they can do that too, and so can the southern peas.
Excellent. So now, in your garden, you have a beautiful trellis there. It's very, very prominent. Do you grow southern peas on the ground, or they have to grow on a trellis?
they can grow on a trellis. Most of them are rambling types. The ones that we have today, the varieties we know, are pretty much bushy type, but they still ramble. And so you could put them on a trellis. If you grow something like the asparagus bean, if you're familiar with that one, that would grow up onto a trellis. So it doesn't hurt to have a trellis there if they can ramble up. But most of them will grow as just bushy plants, and you're not going to have the trellis for them.
Which one's easier to harvest? Are the bushy plants harder to harvest, find the beans?
No, it's not that hard. It's very easy to just find them and pull them off. Of course, you got to stoop over, and as I get older, it's getting harder to stay down there.
I'm with you there. And so southern peas benefit soil by fixing the nitrogen. What does that mean for people who are not familiar with plants and botany? Do they need fertilizer then if they fix the nitrogen?
Once they get up and get growing, as long as the nitrogen fixing bacteria is in the soil, and which in most Florida soils it is, it's not necessarily to do inoculations. There are materials that you can inoculate the seeds with, but we don't really have to. And so what happens is the bacteria in the soil symbiotically lives with the roots of the peas and other beans, also other legumes, and then it takes the nitrogen from the air and it transforms it into the plant, and the plant can use the nitrogen to grow. So it's a symbiotic relationship. I think the plant is giving the bacteria some nutrients and things that they need also, and so the plants just grow. Now, any leftover nitrogen in the plant parts when it's turned into the soil provides nitrogen for the next crop. So these can be used as a cover crop. And like I said, if you grow certain varieties like iron and clay, they'll help reduce the nematode population if you have a nematode problem.
That is great. That was a great explanation. And so pest issues, we've got just a couple of minutes left. Tom,
yeah,
what kind of pests?
Calpe cucurlio, which is a little cucurlio. It's a little beetle-like insect and lays eggs and affects the pods. We also have aphids and stink bugs.
Yeah, okay. And so you're going to be at the Apopka Art and Foliage Festival today, and everyone can come out and see you. Where are you going to be?
I'll be in the SCA Expert area. I'm going to head on out of here very quickly, and I will be up there at 9 o'clock, and I'll be there from 9 to 11 answering the questions. And everybody come on out and say hi and bring your best questions.
That's wonderful, Tom. Thank you so much. You're going to have a lot of fun today, and I appreciate you being on Better Lawns and Gardens. Thank you.
Always happy to do it. You all do such a great job. I always enjoy hearing from you.
Thank you, Tom. Bye-bye. Okay. He is just wonderful. I love him to death. And he is going to be at the Apopka Art and Foliage Festival at the Plant Doctor booth. Go by and tell him hi. And, he is going to be covering for me in July when I go to Ireland.
Yes.
And leading the garden tour to Ireland, he will be covering. So he always fills in, and he's always around for us. So we do appreciate it. So wonderful. I will be posting some information on southern peas for us this weekend on our Facebook page. So you're going to want to catch that. Mm-hmm. And we will come back. I've got lots of great text messages from Melbourne Beach, and also lots of other areas. A lot of long text messages. We'll be right back from Saturday morning from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. I'd like to say a big thank you to Tom McCubbin for coming on and talking to us about southern peas. And Cool Daddy's listening, Lizzie, and he says Tom's on the money. So we're getting great advice. And so I do appreciate that. Also, too, Howie, I'm stressing Howie out. Today I'm just stressing everyone out. Howie says that the orchid repotting service and their little time slot, their event there, doesn't start till 10 a.m.
Okay,
so don't go out there till 10, or if you're there at 9, you know, just walk around and look at all the beautiful plants and try not to buy any, or buy a lot.
No, you buy a lot.
Buy a lot. So let's go to Brenda in Polk City. Good morning, Brenda. How can I help you?
Yes, we have a avocado tree that's probably about 14 years old, and it's probably 17 foot tall.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of avocados starting to bud out or to start growing. We have a lot of weeds underneath this tree, and we have like an 8 foot area that's cleared underneath the tree for to the past the drip line. And we were wondering if we could spray underneath the tree with Roundup to get the weeds out, or do we need to scuffle hose them out?
I would do mechanical. I would do go ahead and do the hand weeding. Right now, since you have the buds on there and the fruit starting, I would not use it. You could normally use it when there's nothing on, you know, if it's just bare ground and you've got the trunk going up to the trunk. But I would not do it right now. Now, do you have mulch underneath your avocado tree?
No.
Okay, that's going to help you prevent the weeds. Put a 3-inch layer of mulch down there, you know, whatever kind of wood mulch or organic mulch that you'd like to use. And that's going to prevent the weeds from coming up and even needing to do the hand clearing or hand pulling and spraying.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Clean it all out and then put the mulch down and you won't have to do it after that. You know, maybe just pull one or two instead of 50 of them. So that's a large space to not to have a ground cover down on it. So thank you for your question. It's a really good question. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's go to Daphne. Daphne in Claremont. Good morning, Daphne. How are you?
I am blessed. I have a pumpkin and it puts out little pumpkin for some unknown reason. They fall off and just keep on happening. I'm looking at it now. There's a flower and there's a little pumpkin. And it keeps on falling off. Why? What can I do to keep them getting?
Well, so they fall off for a couple of different reasons. One, they're not getting what they need as far as water and nutrition go. And two, the pumpkin can only, you know, it knows naturally through Mother Nature how much it can produce and hold on to, and if it doesn't have what it needs, it's going to drop the fruit. So is this just one pumpkin or do you have a whole patch?
No, I just have one pumpkin. Okay. And I was looking, I got so excited. Ooh, where will I go for a week? It falls.
Okay, and so how often is it getting watered?
To be honest with you, I never water it. Am I supposed to water it?
Yes, that's the reason why. It doesn't have the water to hold on to the fruit and produce the fruit. So, you know, your fruit trees and your vegetables always need water. And they don't need a lot of water, but they should get watered at least 2 to 3 times a week. Okay? And so that's the reason why. If it's not getting any water, we've been really dry this year, so the little pumpkins will fall off if it doesn't have enough water. And are you fertilizing it?
No, should I fertilize it?
So, Daphne, I'm going to give you a free subscription to Better Lawns and Gardens.
Okay.
Uh-huh. and we can talk about fertilizing and watering your plants. They do need them. And they need them just for the health. You know, they can survive without, you know, an extreme amount of water, or, you know, just survive on rainfall, and they can survive without nutrients. They're just not going to have any fruit production or, you know, give you a harvest that you need.
Okay. Just want to tell you, I have a cashew tree. I've never heard anybody calling about. I have a cashew tree.
And
it's now putting out flowers. I'm dying to see my cashew.
That is wonderful. They do grow here. I'm so excited that you mentioned that. Well, good
really?
For you. Take a picture of it and send it to us. We would love to see it.
Oh, because I've never heard anybody growing a cashew tree. I got the seed from, I went to Jamaica and I got my neighbor gave him the seed. It was doing very, very good. And remember when we had that cold weather?
Yes.
It dried, but I thought it died. I have the landscape cut it, but now it's growing. And it's sending out flowers.
Wonderful. I'm so happy for you. Now, it is susceptible to freezing, so you do want to make sure it's protected. So if it stays small, you want to get some frost blankets and cover it, put some lights in it. So, okay, because it is susceptible, you'll have to take care of it every winter.
Thanks a lot.
Oh, you're welcome, Daphne. Thank you for your phone call. Water and fertilizer. That'll be great. Let's go to John in Mulberry. Good morning, John. How can I help you?
Yes, my grandmother said, only grow things you can eat. And I grow other things. I have some tea roses.
Okay.
And then what can I do to brighten up their colors? I've got three that kind of bloomed out a little bit, but they're a little dull.
Okay. And are they, well, so they're dull. What you know what color they are?
Yeah, they're a reddish, a pink.
They are a pink, and they're dull. Now, are they dull when they first bloom, or do they get duller as they age?
Well, they seem to get duller as they age, but they're pretty colorful, but I'd like to brighten them up a little bit.
Okay, and do you, are they in full sun?
Yes.
Okay, and how often do you fertilize?
Maybe once a month.
Okay. That's plenty. That sounds good. They just may, you know, be a variety of rose that just fades. And most of them do. As they get older, they just fade out. But do you deadhead them? Do you cut them back? Do you cut them back after they bloom?
A little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, without seeing them, I don't know what's going on with them. But roses do fade as they get older. And so, right before they fall, you know, even the brightest pink ones will be a softer pink, and then sometimes they get darker pink as they age. So I don't know what variety it is. If you want to send me pictures, John, that would be great. You can send them through Facebook, or that you can send them through the website betterlawns.com. All right.
Yeah, your email. What's your email?
Teresa.Watkins@live.com. And so, John, let me know, okay? Hang on, Diane. We're going to get to your phone, your message. And then we got lots of text messages. Thank you so much, Joanne. I hope you're having a good time in Texas. It's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. If you missed any of today's show, you can go to our iHeartRadio and listen wherever you have a podcast where you listen to it. You'll find betterlawns.com, and you can listen to it on our website, but also to anywhere where you listen to podcasts. Let's go to Diane in Kissimmee. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
So what's going on?
I have a problem.
Yes.
I have a problem with my mango tree. It looks like it's dying on me. And I don't know if it's due because of lack of rain, which we've had none here in Kissimmee for over a month. Everything is just awful. The leaves are turning yellow, and they've got black spots on them. And I've taken three different pictures, and I'm going to email them to you.
Okay, great.
If I could.
Yeah.
When I was taking the pictures, I noticed the side of the mango facing the east had really healthy looking leaves on it, but the opposite side facing the west had all these yellow, and they're all over the ground. Is there any hope?
Okay, so what has changed recently? Have you fertilized it in the last month to 6 weeks?
Oh, I hate to tell you, you're going to come and take my mango on me.
No.
I've never fertilized.
Okay, that's fine. No, I just want to know. Okay. No judgment here. This is judgment-free zone. No. Yeah.
Call the mango police.
Okay, and does it have water? Does it have an irrigation system?
It does not have an irrigation system.
So,
But then when I saw it looking droopy, I took the hose out there and I ran the hose for, you know, probably the last 2 days would be a total of an hour and a half.
Okay, so, but it needs it every week, okay? So that's probably the issue. It's dropping its leaves because it can't hold on to them. It's been too hot. And it just hasn't had the water that it needs. So you're going to want to make sure that it gets watered every or twice a week at least for a good 30 minutes.
I will do that.
Okay.
I will do that. They have the most delicious mangoes in the whole world.
It's wonderful. Okay. So we want to treat it better then. So you want to make sure you're going to water it. And that's, you know, basically all year round we need to water it at least water at least once a week if there's no rainfall or if the temperatures are going to freeze and things. You don't want to necessarily water it too much during the winter time.
Yeah.
But it'll recover. Okay. It will recover.
Oh, good. That's what I want to hear. It's a struggle between the high rate of water that they cranked us up to And the fact that it's so darn hot and it's not raining, and everyone says it's going to rain, but it never does.
No, we're not going to get rain for another probably 2 weeks or more. So,
yikes.
Yeah, so make sure you get out there and water it. Great call. Thank you so much, Diane, for listening to Better Lawns and Gardens.
She said, yikes. I love that.
So we're going to go through text messages. We've had really a great text message. If you'd like to give me a text message or a phone call, we have plenty of time. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me 23680. So let me start here at the bottom. My mouse is going crazy.
Keep on
today.
Scrolling.
Yeah, no, it's my mouse is going crazy today. It's all technology, right?
Yes,
okay, so let's see here. Ira said, I've heard berry and fish in a garden is good for plants and flowers. Is this true? Does it make a good fertilizer? Yes. Fish in the ground has, if you bury it, it will decompose and add lots of minerals to the garden bed. But it's better to put it in your compost pile, Ira, because it stinks. And so you go ahead and decompose it, put it in your compost pile and let it deteriorate there, not necessarily in your garden. Anybody who's put fish fertilizer on your plants will understand that. Joanne is in Texas today, and she said that school glue works well for getting out glaucids. You'll have to listen to the dirty word of the day, but patience is required to let it dry completely before removing. Thank you so much. And Linda from Zone 8B says, can knockout rose clippings be rooted in water? Technically, scientifically, yes, it can. It may take a little while. And so, I would root it in soil. It will start faster if you root it in soil and just keep the ground moist, Linda. Okay, I wouldn't necessarily try it. It's long term. You have to change the water out, and it's quite a process here. So let's see, going right here. And I had distilled water. Mike wanted to know his Calathea White Fusion, which is a gorgeous plant. If you love houseplants, Calathea White Fusion, you can get that from Costa Farms. Does it need distilled water, and what's the benefit of it? Okay, so Calatheas do not like chlorine, Mike, in the water. So if you have a highly chlorinated tap water, then you're going to want to let the water sit and that chlorine evaporate. That's the only difference between distilled water and your tap water, is that distilled water has the minerals taken out and removes minerals. Now, not all plants like distilled water because they do need the minerals to be healthy, those micronutrients. And so I would just let the water sit overnight on your counter and then water with that. You don't have to buy distilled water. These plants, Calatheas, and a lot of the jungle plants, the tropical plants, do not like heavily chlorinated water. And that's what we have in our tap water. So I hope that makes sense, Mike. Thank you so much for your question. Let's see. Elmer's Glue. Here we go.
I have a friend on Facebook, and he was the one who, by me watching him plant his poinsettias about 2 years ago, encouraged me to want to plant my poinsettias in the ground. So I ran into him at the Earth Day birthday event our sister station was having last weekend, and I told him about that, and he was just, thought it was great. But he says, yeah, they are very little right now. And I go, what do you mean? They were like taller than me. And he says, I cut them back and I watered them. And I go, okay. And I was asking, like, you were asking chlorine, this and that. Yeah. And he's, no, he has, well, it doesn't smell like sulfur or anything. Right. Mm-hmm. So he's like, I don't know what happened with it, So it's for 2 years been growing tall, thick, beautiful. Mm-hmm. And he cut them back, and now he's got almost nothing.
Okay, well, sometimes you can cut plants back by a third. So, he's cut them back down to the ground. How tall is it now?
I don't know if it was all the way to the ground, but it didn't seem like it was that tall whenever he was talking to me. So maybe about 2 feet, where these things were like over about 5 feet tall.
Right. So if it's 5 feet tall and they cut it down to 2, it shouldn't be too bad. I would just go ahead and keep watering it and fertilizing it, and it should recover. Sometimes when you cut back a lot, mm-hmm. it just stresses out, and it it's now putting down the roots even more. So it's going to struggle for a little bit, but it should be just fine.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, as long as he gets water on it. Okay, so we have a lovely Nepenthes, and I don't know who this is, but it is in Jacksonville. We bought it, brought it inside periodically over winter when the lows dipped below 50. The pitchers dried up. The branches and stems are about 3 feet long and new growth at the base. We have it planted in cedar chips, i.e. orchid chips. Should we change the potting medium, and can we stimulate pitcher growth? You can tell the leaf ends have the beginning of a pitcher, but some are drying out. It may be too dry, so they like humidity. And so you're going to want to spritz it and make sure it's getting enough water. Okay, so Nepenthes, again, they like that humidity. And Florida is very humid in some of the places. The jungles, the rainforests are humid. So I would go ahead and make sure it is getting water when it needs it. And then also, too, you're going to want to spritz it maybe a couple of times a day, just making sure that they're getting enough humidity and moisture. So that was a great question. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening, too. They've listened for years. Salutations from Buffalo and Melbourne Beach. My avocado flowered this spring in over half the tree. I saw many bees and insects pollinating. I think I'll see fruit this year, but I see no more flowers anywhere on the tree. And she's keeping her fingers crossed. Well, good luck with that. You don't see any more flowers because they've fallen off, and the tree is really right now working on producing the fruit. So start to look in a couple of weeks. Start looking, and you might see fruit growing. Let us know how you do. Good morning, Teresa. My west-facing tree, and I think we figured out it's a gardenia, looks healthy, but the trunk looks like it's peeling off or something chewing at it, or the tree is sick. I have a sprinkler system which goes on for a few hours, very early morning, 2 days a week. Thoughts? Well, I don't want your sprinkler system to be watering it for a couple of hours. So that's kind of got me confused. Bark will, we got to go. The water may be too much for the gardenia tree. I have just had so many questions. So make sure you're not watering often, but do me a favor. Text me, text your email address. And 23680, and I will answer your question on your gardenia tree. And I'll respond to all the other text messages that I didn't get to today. Had a busy day.
Very busy day. Very productive day. And we have the best listeners in the whole wide world, because not only do they text us with the proper information, first name and location, but we have had excellent callers, too.
Yeah, excellent today. So I want to thank Kenny Coogans with the International Carnivorous Plant Society. Go out and see him next week, May 4th. Buy Nepenthes and buy all sorts of exotic plants. We do appreciate it. Go out and see Tom McCubbin today at the Apopka Art and Foliage Festival. He'll be there from 9 to 11, and I will be there from 1 to 3. Please stop by and say hello and bring me your plants, and we'll take care of that. Howie's repotting orchids today from 10 to 11 at Peterson's Nursery. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, if it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
Go to our website, betterlawns.com, and you can check out all the podcasts there and catch anything that you missed. If you think Teresa may have missed your question, well, go back and listen to see if she covered it.